Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Seiko. Zach, I'm still trying to figure out how to react to all this college playoff football. We're so used to that one bowl game, and here we've had a conference championship game. We've had a home playoff game. We had the Fiesta Bowl. Now we're headed to the Orange Bowl. If you're a college football fan, this is like Christmas Day over and over again.
Well, for Penn State anyway, right? I mean, Penn State fans, I am used to, you know, talking more about the transfer portal and needs and the depth chart for the upcoming season. Now we're talking about actual games, actual analysis, actual X's and O's. So all of that stuff, I'm glad it gets to wait.
Yeah, so am I. It's fantastic. And like I said, I'm still, it's like your body clock is changing, as you talked about. Right now, we're supposed to be talking about the transfer portal and recruiting and all of that, and we still get to talk about games. We've got upcoming Thursday night at the Orange Bowl. It's against Notre Dame. This is the old traditional, feels like a throwback to 30 years ago, Penn State versus Notre Dame. I wanted to get your take on this Notre Dame team, which, speaking of old school, kind of has an old school style to it. Mm-hmm. Let's start with their regular season and what they went through after what may have been their biggest win in the regular season against Texas A&M. They come back and somehow find a way to lose to Northern Illinois. First of all, and everybody started to write them off. How does this Notre Dame team lose to Northern Illinois?
There's a lot of reasons. I mean, it's kind of the same argument that, you know, Penn State kind of deals with the same thing. Well, they struggle with Bowling Green, so they really shouldn't be here. I don't let one game define a team. I think that it was early in the season. They were figuring things out. They had lost some guys to season-ending injuries, and Northern Illinois was looking to play spoiler, but it also is indicative that Notre Dame's offense can be a liability if you are really able to limit them in the ground game. So it is not a condemnation of Notre Dame as a team. This team belongs in the semifinals. They earned it. They beat Indiana. They beat Georgia, right? SEC champion Georgia. So that's got to account for something. But if Northern Illinois can pick up a win against you at home, then that's definitely of concern. So I don't put too much stock into saying that, oh, I write them off. I don't think that they can't beat Penn State. I don't think that this is a good team. I did not want to face Notre Dame. From Penn State's perspective, I would rather have Penn State face Georgia for the sake of a win. For the sake of entertainment, historical implications, Penn State versus Notre Dame was the one. But for, you know, hey, can Penn State, what gives Penn State a better chance at making the national championship against most likely Ohio State? They needed to face Georgia in that case. But it's not that they can't get a win against Notre Dame either. I mean, this is going to be close. This is going to be tough. Northern Illinois just put together a perfect game plan. I think Notre Dame didn't put its best game plan together, and they got caught. That's really what it was. They got caught trying to conceal plays, execution, all of those kinds of things. And fortunately, they were able to recover from it for their sake, because if they lost another game, they would not have been in the college football playoff.
Well, I think what's impressive, and I've heard even some Notre Dame people talk about saying the Northern Illinois loss was actually a blessing in disguise for this team because of their reaction to it, whether it was just the feeling, like you pointed out, you lose another game and you've eliminated yourself from the playoffs. But from that point forward, they played very well. Now, you talked about the offense being a vulnerability potentially for Notre Dame, but this is a team that's built on their defense. And I did a quick look through the seat, at least through the reg. Well, also could count the playoffs in this stat. Mm-hmm. They allowed more than 20 points only twice all season. And that was against Louisville and against USC, two games, obviously, that they won. this is a pretty impressive defense, isn't it?
For Notre Dame, it's why they're here. The defense helps set up the offense, and basically the offense just tries to play mistake-free football. Don't turn over the football, play ball control, time of possession, play keep away, because the defense can force turnovers. They force turnovers at any point in time. I think what's more impressive about Notre Dame is the fact that they force timely turnovers. If a team starts to drive and backs are against the wall, they're getting ready to give up 3-6 points, they get a turnover in the red zone. So that it's not only the amount of turnovers that they force, but the timeliness of them too. So when they're getting ready, oh, you're getting ready to score on Notre Dame. No, you're not. think differently. And that's Al Golden. That's Al Golden's scheme. That's Al Golden's complexity. And then the Notre Dame players being able to handle that. And Penn State fans should recognize Al Golden, because former tight end at Penn State, impact player during Joe Paterno's tenure. And he coached linebackers for Penn State. He also interviewed for Penn State when the coaching job was available, and James Franklin ultimately got it. But he was one of the candidates on the list. This one's personal for him. So if you think that Notre Dame's, if you already respect Notre Dame's defense, this is a top five defense objectively. Penn State's defense is top 10 objectively. So you are getting a classic defensive struggle here. But Al Golden is going to have that much extra motivation to maybe not necessarily stick it to his alma mater, but this one's personal for him. Let's be honest about that.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's a stick it to Penn State, but I think it's, as much as he's a Penn Stater, he wants to show the Penn State fan base, look, this is who I am and what I'm about, and impress them. So I would expect Notre Dame's defense to put their best foot forward. And in fact, we're talking about Notre Dame's ability to force turnovers, play mistake-free themselves. Their game against Georgia, that was it in a capsule. In one game, that's who Notre Dame is, right?
No, I don't read too much into the Georgia game as much as everyone wants to say, because a lot of my comments that I've seen over on Locked On Nittany Lions have been, well, who has Penn State defeated? They, you know, Notre Dame has a quality victory against Georgia. That is not the same Georgia team. Let's be honest about that, Jim. That is a team that lost its starting quarterback. That is potentially a future NFL starter. That is I won't go into Carson Beck's draft profile, but that is a significant drop off going from Carson Beck as an early NFL draft pick to Gunnar Stockton. And Georgia's offense was still able to at least have some relative success. I know they didn't score, because that's all that matters. Everybody cares about the scoreboard. But Gunnar Stockton was still able to hit big plays. Why is a quarterback that struggles to throw the football and wide receivers that struggle to catch? Georgia's passing offense was able to get some big chunk plays. They were averaging over 8 yards per attempt, 11 yards per completion. Georgia's passing offense was able to do that. They just couldn't finish drives. And Notre Dame, look, it's not to say that they were bailed out. But Notre Dame, you are not going to get a kick return for a touchdown against Penn State. You're not going to get timely fumbles in the game, right? Georgia should have kneeled the football instead of trying to score in 30 seconds. Hindsight's 20/20. Kirby Smart knows what he's doing. But as a result, you gave Notre Dame the football back with 35 seconds in the first half, when you could have gone into halftime and not, instead you give them 7 more points. So take away those 14 points from Notre Dame, which aren't going to happen again against Penn State. Then it's 13, they won 23-10. It's now 13-9 in favor of Georgia, or 10-9 in favor of Georgia. And then Georgia's game plan changes completely. So you got Georgia out of its comfort zone, where it wanted to run the ball and have a balanced attack. You take away those 14 points, it's a complete, and I know that Notre Dame got them, but how often do kick returns happen, and how often do those kinds of plays happen at the end of the first half in short range? Notre Dame didn't dominate Georgia, but they got key plays that were the difference.
Well, I think it's not so much that there's credit in beating a good Georgia team. You're right. It's no longer, this is not the elite Georgia team from the last several years, even prior to the Carson Beck injury. Throw that in there, and it's not quite the same Georgia team. But I think the point, stylistically, though, that's a Notre Dame style of win. It's a defensive game, a low-scoring game. The other team committed some mistakes with their turnovers, gave up the kickoff return. I think that's how Notre Dame wins games.
Yes.
But it's not an explosive team. And I'll segue that into a little bit of how about a scouting report on Riley Leonard, their quarterback?
I mean, Riley Leonard's not a great passer, and they don't have a lot of great receiving options. I mean, this is an okay group, and I think that's being generous. When I look at that, that's per the analytics. The analytics says this is a middle of the road group. Riley Leonard is an okay passer. He's a great college quarterback. He's a proven leader. He's a veteran. You're not going to be able to confuse him. You're not going to be able to trick him. But he also is just not that great of a passer. He relies on his legs a lot. And if Penn State, easier said than done, because not a lot of teams have done it this season, if you take away his legs, he can't beat you with his arm. It was kind of the same thing. The blueprint was take away Ashton Jeanty, and then what does Boise State do? Jeremiah Love's banged up. Again, easier said than done, but the formula is pretty simple. Stop Riley Leonard as a runner, make him pass, and then what? Because Mitchell Evans, the tight end, is good, has a lot of potential, but he's recovering from an ACL injury. He's just not the same player. The wide receivers on the outside or the other passing options that Riley Leonard has are not better than A.J. Harris, Jalen Kimber, Zion Tracy, Audavian Collins. It's either neutralized or like an A.J. Harris and a Jalen Kimber, they're going to be able to win their one-on-ones. And honestly, I'd take Zion Tracy too in the slot. Now, Notre Dame will get, you know, here and there, but 50-50, I lean Penn State's defensive backs. Same thing can be said for Notre Dame's defensive backs against Trey Wallace, Amari Evans, right? So it kind of all across the board cancels it out. So what's the differentiating factor? Riley Leonard as a runner. And that's why Abdul Carter, his availability above all else, he just needs to be available. I know you would like, if you're Penn State, to have your superstar player available, like be 100% or as close to it as possible. But if you can have him be available and play this hybrid role, basically you are Riley Leonard's defender. You are here to take away Riley Leonard in this game. That's really what they need from Abdul Carter to get a win.
And as far as Abdul Carter goes, his legs are fine.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's probably a shoulder injury. Maybe that's a little tough for tackling. But we know the legs are still there. The speed, that ability to track down Riley Leonard is there. All right, we're going to keep up this conversation on Notre Dame, and we'll preview, and we're even going to get Zach's prediction for the game. We're going to do that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante along with Zach Seiko. Zach, let our listeners know where they could find everything from Zach Seiko.
Well, I appreciate that, Jim. So I'm over at Locked On Nittany Lions. It's a daily podcast devoted to Penn State football, basketball, wrestling, every single day. And that's really, with all these games, it really has been that case. It's normally just 5 days a week, but now it is daily. We are on a streak of shows. So it's available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And so I appreciate the shameless plug.
Oh, no problem at all. We love your show. We love having you on our show, Zach. So I really appreciate it. Unfortunately, you mentioned things like basketball and wrestling. That was a disappointing game for the Hoops team against Indiana at the Palestra.
Yeah, it was, especially since Indiana was banged up. You know, I'll keep it brief because we're talking Penn State, Notre Dame, but because men's basketball has a chance to recover. It's winner take all here with Penn State, Notre Dame. And truly, there's a lot on the line here. You know, James Franklin can kind of break that stigma about big game James and everything like that. I haven't gotten the chance to say it yet. I really am tired of that. It is not... I do not put stock It is not an indication of how Penn State will play in 2025 against a team that they match up at least well with. This isn't an overall advantageous matchup for the Nittany Lions, but they're at least not in a mismatch situation. What they did in 2017, 2018, 2019 has no bearing on what Penn State does in 2025 in a national semifinal against a completely different Notre Dame team that they haven't even seen since 2007. So, oh, well, James Franklin's 1-whatever or 2-10 against top 5 teams, top 10 teams. I could care less. It is about this game, this matchup right now on January 9, 2025.
Candidly, Zach, it's lazy journalism. It is. It's easy to just pull out the record. And it's like I said, it's lazy. Yeah. And so I'm with you on that. So let's get back. Let's continue talking about this Penn State Notre Dame game. I think it's also interesting. You talked about the ability to stop Jordan Love. He's banged up a bit. Could they stop Riley Leonard also running the game? I think it's also important to point out against Georgia, I had to check this number twice. Riley Leonard was 15 for 24 for 90 yards, literally less than 4 yards an attempt. That's not a passing game that scares you. So, how does Penn State defense now react? We saw what they did against Boise State. They just said, Ashton Gentry, not going to beat us, okay? They swarmed to the ball. It was never one tackler. It was always multiple guys there. What do you expect to see then from Penn State to neutralize Notre Dame's running game?
I think you do the same thing, but you swarm to Riley Leonard. I think you set the tone early. This is a quarterback. He's not afraid to take hits. I like and respect Riley Leonard to the fact that he's able to ad lib and he will do whatever it takes to extend a play, get a first down. But it, you know, still, you know, saying one thing and being able to do it is another. Notre Dame just does not do it consistently enough. If you put them behind, if you can win on first down, if you can put them behind the sticks in a second and 12 situation, things get a little more complex for Notre Dame. Then you have these injuries that are piling up. They're not only costly, they're timely. They've had time. It's kind of like how Penn State has been able to overcome, or at least, you know, deal with an Alonzo Ford and a KJ Winston, guys that you've had time to adapt. Notre Dame has done that as well, but now in the playoffs, they are having some of their biggest impact players end up on the injury report. A Howard Cross and a Riley Mills are their two best defensive players up front. In that front seven, out of all the guys that they could be missing or that are going to be limited, I think Howard Cross is going to try to play, but he's still not going to be 100%, and he exited in the game against Georgia. Riley Mills is out. He's done. They lost him in that Indiana game. Those are those two best players on the front four. And then you flip it over to offense. Part of the reason that this ground game for Notre Dame is so talented or is so hard to stop is because of Jeremiah Love. Jeremiah Love is an all-star running back. Now, they have guys behind him, Jadarian Price and Neas Williams, who definitely have my attention and can offset this to an extent. But Jeremiah Love is going to be a future potential, I won't say a first-round pick, but he will be an early selection in a future NFL draft. One of the top running backs taken, because running backs aren't selected in the top 5, the top 10 as frequently anymore. But he will be one of the first 3 running backs selected. So that's the talent. It's debatable. Catron Allen, Singleton, and Jeremiah Love, who is the best of the bunch? And personally, you know, I hate to say it, I would lean Jeremiah Love slightly, and that's no disrespect to Singleton and Allen, but that's how good Jeremiah Love is. My point is he is limited. So you have that kind of caliber player that is banged up that's not going to be 100%. So that's why I'm saying, okay, who's the next best option in the ground game? It's not Jadarian Price. It's not Aeneas Williams. It is Riley Leonard. So what Penn State did to Ashton Gentry, you need to do for Riley Leonard's running ability, because that's what bailed out Notre Dame in that Georgia game when they needed it. When they needed to play on offense, they turned to Riley Leonard's legs, because you said, oh, well, he only had 90 yards through the air. I'm pretty sure he had 80 on the ground for a quarterback. That is really good.
Yeah, it's significant. That's where the fear is of how he could beat you. Mm-hmm. Zach, let's flip the switch a little bit over to the other side. When Penn State has the ball versus Notre Dame's very stout defense, coming into this game, last 3 games, Penn State's running game has been been tremendous. Just a quick look. Catron Allen, last three games, 328 yards, 7.8 yards per carry. Nick Singleton, not as the same number of carries, but 282 yards and 7.8 yards per carry. First of all, what's been the key to Penn State opening up the running game the way they are? And is that going to be the key to winning this game, those running backs?
Yes, it is, because you want to play keep away from Notre Dame's offense because they want to control time of possession. The same things that James Franklin emphasizes, turnovers, time of possession, explosive plays, Notre Dame emphasizes the same things. So they, at their core offensively, or at the core as a team, are built the same way with the same fundamentals. To answer your question about why the ground game has been so much better, it's because Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton are fully healthy. Those guys, Penn State's never going to admit it. James Franklin's not going to give us any details, but Nicholas Singleton, we knew because we could visibly see it, but Catron Allen certainly had lost a step. And logically speaking, how do Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton take a step back when they're in their third year of starting as a Division I running back at the Power 4 level? How does Catron Allen get worse? He looks it. But it just doesn't logically make sense because he wasn't 100%. He was playing through bumps and bruises of his own. And now those two players, two key guys for Penn State, are now as healthy as that you could ever ask them to be. Catron Allen, people were hard on him, myself included, being critical and saying, man, he's only averaging 2 yards per carry. What's going on? How did he take a step back? Because he's just not healthy. Because he's just, and the offensive line is now playing some of its best football. So you couple those two things. The offensive line is peaking, and Allen and Singleton are at their healthiest, which is perfect going into the postseason.
Yeah, that is timely. And I thought Catron Allen's performance last week may have been the best single game performance we've seen from him. And probably his best run in the game was taken off the board because of a penalty. Yeah. So he was very impressive. I'm also glad you brought up the offensive line. I think the addition of Nolan Rucci, or I should say the absence of Anthony Donka, scared me a bit. Nolan Rucci has been very good.
Oh, Nolan, better than that. I mean, he's been great. He's been grading out per the analytics from Pro Football Focus as the best overall offensive tackle. So that's saying a lot for somebody that, was brought in with the mind of he was going to compete for playing time, but he wasn't necessarily projected as the starter for Penn State because Anthony Donko is Penn State's best overall offensive lineman. So to lose Anthony Donko in general, what was huge, and Nolan Rucci's been able to offset that and then some. My concerns lie in the interior of the offensive line for Penn State. The blitz pickup was bad against Boise State. Nick Dawkins, Sal Wormley, maybe it's Drew Aller, right? It's a communication issue. It's not a talent issue. It's a communication issue. You're still going up against now. If those blitz issues are going to happen, because I haven't seen Drew Aller under that kind of duress this season. A year ago, yes, but and that's pretty telling. So the offensive line has to get into shape because Notre Dame, Al Golden, like to pressure. They are going to blitz. They are going to rely on their defensive backs to win in man-to-man coverage. And that's why they devote a bunch of resources to selling out for the run game and for the blitz because they're so stout in the back end of the defense. If you are going to have those issues against Boise State, you better get them cleaned up against Notre Dame because Notre Dame is a better version of what Boise State likes to do and be aggressive and just have stunts, twists, blitzes. It's basically that times 10 when it comes to Al Golden's defense at Notre Dame.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to ask you about it. Obviously, yes, Boise State did well with their blitzes. And if you're Notre Dame and you see that with more talent on their defense, you are definitely going to you know what you're up against. Zach, I also thought a key in the Boise State game was Penn State, as good as the running game was, they were willing to take their shots. And I don't think it's quite as obvious, but when you're willing to do that on offense, the defense at least has to respect the possibility, which I think also helps out the running game.
Well, that's just it. I think the difference in this game is the fact that Penn State's offense is balanced. And I trust Drew Aller and Tyler Morin more as an efficient passing duo. Riley Leonard doesn't have an option like Tyler Warren. This is a Heisman contender at tight end. Riley Leonard does not have that across the board. I respect Mitchell Evans. I respect Jordan Faison, but they are not as reliable. Okay, 2-minute drill. If Notre Dame happens to be down by a touchdown or down by where they need a touchdown to go get a game-winning drive, Riley Leonard and that passing attack cannot do that. So if Penn State can force them into that situation, and I think they can, and I think they will, I have Penn State winning 24-20. It's the fact that they are more efficient in the passing game for Penn State, and they are balanced. Notre Dame cannot play from behind. They have to have the lead.
And looking at this, I'm glad you jumped the gun on me with your prediction. I appreciate that.
I have your notes. I have your show notes in front of me.
You know what's coming. We've done this enough times now, Zach. I think the other part to this is I'm not sure Notre Dame all season has seen a quarterback as good as Drew Aller.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. We're all talking about, Penn State hasn't beaten anybody. SMU and Boise State are not legitimate top 10 teams. Who has Notre Dame beat exactly? Army's one-dimensional. Navy's one-dimensional. Oh, well, they beat USC better than Penn State beat USC. That was not the same USC team. Come on.
And they had things go their way. They had a lot of breaks in that game. All right, that is it for Zach. When we come back, Sean Gold shows up. We're going to make some picks for both semifinal games. Stay tuned for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. And as promised, joining me is Sean Gold from Sean's Take. Sean, we've been off for a couple of weeks because of the holidays. How are you doing, my friend? And did you have a nice holiday?
I'm doing well, Jim. Thank you. Had a great holiday. And of course, I did miss this. I'm not going to lie. I missed being on the show. I missed talking sports with you. So I'm excited to be back for the new year. We got some amazing topics to cover today, and obviously some incredible games coming up. So I'm pumped for this episode.
So am I. I've missed the conversations. I've missed looking at the spreads. I've missed making our picks. But let me start with this, Sean. You're a younger guy, okay? I'm an old guy. This has been kind of like a culture shock for me, this change in the college football playoff system. We went from, you know, just having one game, just the bowl games, to a four-team playoff, now 12 teams, and it's just like extended the season. As Penn State folks, we're getting set for, what, our 16th game of the season. It feels like we've got all this bonus football. How have you acclimated to it? I know, to me, it's just like every day I get up and I'm like, oh my goodness, we got another game going.
Well, it is exciting because, of course, I want to watch as much football as I can. So I've been pumped for that. The one thing that I think is the biggest takeaway, you know, back in my playing days, we had a 10-game season. Ivy League did not advance the playoffs, so we had 10 games. It's a long 10 weeks. 16 weeks, I don't think people understand as a player and as a coach how long of a season this must feel for them. So I'm enjoying watching it. And I know the players are enjoying being in the playoffs, competing for a national championship game, but this is an NFL season now. 16 games. That's what the NFL used to play before they expanded a couple years ago. It's a long season. It's a lot on your body. But as fans and as, you know, these media consumers that we are, we love it. We really do.
And for the teams to be able to get up for another, not just another game, but another big game. It's conference championship games, then that the excitement of a home playoff game, then another playoff game, and you're still a couple games away from the championship. The other thing that I wanted to get your take on, which I found fascinating, with the expansion of the playoffs. First of all, first when we had the 4-team, now with the 12-team, we had something new, which is players sitting out of the other bowl games. And the feeling was that the interest in the other bowl games would go away. And I found it intriguing, and it was just today I was reading that, do you know that the television ratings are up almost across the board for all the non-playoff bowl games?
I did not, and I would have guessed the exact opposite if you had me guess on where the ratings stood. So that's really interesting, because it has been hard to see. X team is going in with 9 offensive starters in the portal. Like, it's a weird time. So the fact that you just said the ratings are up is pretty amazing to me.
It took me by surprise also. And what I was wondering is, and I'll use myself as an example. A lot of times you root for other teams in your own conference. You know, it looks better for you during the regular season. Strength of schedule, you know, a lot of Penn State fans were rooting for Illinois to maintain a ranked season. But to be honest with you, I never really cared. If anything, I would root against Michigan because I don't like them. But what I found myself for the first time, because of all this Southeast Conference talk and whining that they were doing, I found myself watching, you know, Michigan play against Alabama, watching Illinois playing against South Carolina, because all of a sudden I felt the rooting interest, more so less rooting for my Big Ten brethren and more rooting against the Southeast Conference.
I completely agree. And it's, you know, with all the conference realignment, we lost some of the rivalries in the sense of, you know, Pac-12, Big Ten kind of rivalry game. But we have created more rivalries from conference to conference. And it is really true. I found myself rooting for Ohio State for the first time in my life. Saying, I hope you beat a SEC team right now. And that was never the case before with me. I was like you. I don't like those teams. I'm not going to root for them. I don't care if it makes Penn State look better. But now you kind of have this more of a Big Ten alliance because we're creating these super conferences and you want to be represented by the conference that's on top now. So it's interesting how so many dynamics have changed. And I think the conference to conference rivalries now are something that the media hasn't discussed enough. And I bet this is a subject that's going to really pick up in the offseason as they start to find new things to talk about after the national championship game is SEC Big Ten. This is a new rivalry across conferences that we haven't really seen before.
I think you're right. And what I think is fascinating is you're right that the media hasn't talked about it in that way, but I think it's media created because of their obvious bias in so many ways, and talking down, you know, SMU and Indiana, they don't belong. Alabama does belong. And I think my rooting interest wasn't so much pro Big Ten as it was anti-SEC and anti all those analysts. All right, let's take a look, though, at the quarterfinal games that went on last week. It was an interesting set of games. There were 3 Big Ten teams represented. 2 of them had to play against each other. Let's start there with Ohio State versus Oregon. Ohio State was favored in this game, despite Oregon being ranked number 1, undefeated. And boy, Ohio State did not disappoint, did they?
No, they didn't. And, you know, I went into this game thinking Ohio State was going to be advancing. I did not think it would look like it did. With 30-something points in the first half, the game was over as soon as it started, it seemed like. And I think it showed us that Ohio State had some bumps this season, but when they are on, they may be the best team in the country. And I think it all is dependent on how is Will Howard going to play. When he plays like a top-level quarterback with those skill positions there, I don't know anyone who can truly shut down Ohio State's offense. When he's off, that's when you can beat him. And so opposing teams need to figure out how to rattle him so they have a chance. Because if he's not rattled and he's in there hitting his targets, I don't know there's anyone that's going to beat him. And that was on full display against Oregon.
And it definitely was. And I also think the other variable with Ohio State is how Chip Kelly calls a game. And I don't know how much Ryan Day sticks his nose into the play calling. But we talked about this, I think, when Ohio State lost to Michigan, how conservative their play calling was. And you saw them both against Tennessee and against Oregon just coming out, throwing the ball all over the place.
Yeah, and they're dangerous when they do that. And that wasn't something we saw them do, you know, against Michigan when they lost, and even against Penn State. Penn State was able to contain that a bit when they played them. And Ohio State seems like they've turned the page on a couple things offensively, and that's scary if you're an opponent against Ohio State right now.
I agree. Ohio State at their best is better than anybody else at their best. Without a doubt, the most competitive, exciting game was Arizona State and Texas. Ends up going into overtime. Arizona State made a big comeback in the game. Then Texas had a big play in overtime. That one just went back and forth. Arizona State, though, I think showed that they belonged.
They definitely did. And they were a team that I think a lot of people thought didn't belong. So the fact that they had that comeback, that was incredible. The game looked over and they got back into it, took the momentum. Mm. We can talk about a targeting call that should have probably been called that could have won them the game. Really good season for Arizona State, who is not on the map at all in terms of playoff picture heading into the year. We talked about how crazy the Big 12 was all year long. They showed that they deserved to win the Big 12 and also deserved to be in the college football playoff and could easily be playing in the semifinals right now.
They can, and probably should have. I'm with you. That targeting call, you could not like the targeting rule, but still look at that and say, that's what they call targeting. And the fact that it went to review and they still didn't call it. But I will also point out in this game, Texas had, what, a 4th-and-13 in overtime? Talk about a clutch play. And my feeling is this game is the reason why we have the 12-team playoff, or it should be. I know it's about money, but as a fan, to me, this is why I want the 12-team playoff.
I completely agree, and I'm really happy this game happened because there were a lot of blowouts, and it was hard to make an argument on why some of these teams deserve to be there. Arizona State showed why 12 teams should be in, though.
They did. It was just a wonderful college football game, even if you had no rooting interest. The other non-Penn State game, it was Penn State's opponent, coming up in this semifinal, Notre Dame beat Georgia 23-10. It was interesting. This was as old school as you get, Sean. It was about field position. It was about turnovers. It was about special teams. The fact is, Georgia actually outgained Notre Dame in this game,
which is really shocking that, you know, you win by 13 points while being outgained. But like you said, it was an old school game. The first half was looking like a snooze fest, and then it picked up a little bit, but we saw how much Georgia's dynamics changed without Carson Beck back there. And, you know, Notre Dame has a good front seven, so it's a hard team to just go ground and pound against, and Notre Dame controlled the clock and made the right plays at the right time to get a win there.
Yeah, they did. They look like a well-coached team, well-disciplined team, and I think the example on that, they went out as if they were going to punt. Then they did a mass substitution. That was well planned out, well executed by the team. Lots of credit to Marcus Freeman for having his team ready for a play like that.
Definitely. He's been one of my favorite coaches to watch. I love the way he leads this team, and I wouldn't have said that in the regular season.
Yes, and I think we all gave Notre Dame up for dead when they lost early in the season to Northern Illinois. A lot of credit to them for how they've played since. I know until Georgia, they did not have that marquee win. Georgia is their marquee win. But this goes back to this whole thing, though. You spend so much energy, emotional, physical energy, and guess what? Notre Dame's reward is they got to come back and do this again in less than a week. We're going to talk about Penn State's quarterfinal, then those semifinals when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He is Sean Gold from Sean's Take. I am Jim Galante. Sean, we talked about all three of the other quarterfinal matchups. We didn't talk about Penn State, Boise State. I haven't talked to you since. I think we texted a little bit during the game, but Penn State had a chance, boy, to put the nail in the coffin to end the thing early. They had the fumble when they could have been driving to make it 21-0. I think the game would have been over at that point. But was Penn State ever in danger in that game?
No, I don't think so. And at that moment that you just talked about, you felt a little bit of momentum come back for Boise State. And especially after seeing, you know, what Arizona State had done, you kind of had in the back of your mind, are we about to see something crazy? And then Penn State, to their credit, never let it get to that point. So I think in this game, you got to be really happy with what Penn State did. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. I was worried that you're playing the only non-Power 4 team in the playoffs. You can't mess around and keep this thing close, and they did not. 31-14, that's a dominating score right there, and they did their job, and that's what I'm really happy about for Penn State.
And, of course, I think this was the best game we've seen Catron Allen play since he's gotten there.
Yes. No, I mean, 17 rushes for 134 yards, 7.9 yards per carry. That's a lot of confidence heading into a Notre Dame defense that's going to be a bit better than Boise State, but Drew Auer throwing three touchdown passes, there's a lot to like from this game.
And going into this semifinal game, Catron Allen, last three games, has averaged over 100 yards per game rushing and 7.8 yards per carry. Guess what? Nick Singleton, same thing, 7.8 yards per carry. Very impressive over the last three games, and that could be a key going forward. Before we get to the semifinals, just one other little note. Fascinating. We've had lots of conversations about the top four teams, four conference winners, getting the top four seeds and those byes. All four of those teams lost. Tell you anything, or is that just – my take is it really is meaningless. It's just the circumstances of this year's selections.
I do agree. I don't think that this will happen every year, and we'll see if the committee adjusts. I think the one where you could argue not getting a top four seed would have been Boise State, because if you ranked them 1 through 12, Boise State wouldn't have been the third team in that list. But did we expect Oregon to lay an egg like they did? No. Did Georgia have some injuries that kind of crushed them? Yes. So there were interesting circumstances there. And then to their credit, Arizona State could be playing this week if a couple different plays went their way. So there were definitely, you know, I don't always agree with how the seeding went, but I don't think it's that big of a problem either.
Well, I think the lower seed was actually the favorite going into each one of those games. You know, Penn State big over Boise State. Texas, even though it went into overtime, Texas was big favorite against Arizona State. And Ohio State, Oregon, Ohio State just a slight favorite. And Georgia, Notre Dame, again, you had to probably go Notre Dame's way, mostly because Georgia was missing their starting quarterback. But I've seen some people overreacting to it, talking in terms of the long layoff that those teams had because of the bye. I don't think that was the issue. I just think it was the circumstances that we had. All right, Sean, let's look at these games. Let's look at the spreads. Let's look at what your take is on these games. Let's start with Ohio State and Texas. Interesting. Ohio State, I think they started out like a 7 or 6.5 point favorite. Now it's actually down to 5.5 points, which seems like money is going Texas's way. That surprise you at all?
You know, I think that spread is right about where it should be. We have seen, and we just talked about it in the last quarter, when Ohio State is at their best, there's nobody that's going to touch them. And we saw a dominating win against Oregon, who was the only undefeated, you know, Power Four team left. And now at 5.5, I think it's settled right there. It's a tough number. Are they a touchdown better than Texas? Because you really got to win by 6, which typically means you're winning by 7. And what are we going to get from Texas? We've seen two very different Texas teams. When they're on, they may be the second best team in college football, but they're just not always on. And what are we going to get from them? So I thought this entire time I'd be taking Ohio State with the points. I'm going to go with Texas plus 5.5. I don't see how Sarkisian doesn't have his team ready in this game. So I think it's going to be a very hard fought game. I think it's going to be close to the end. I would think Ohio State wins this game because I do think that they're probably the best team in college football right now, but I'm going to take Texas with the points. I think there's enough randomness that can happen to keep Texas in this game. And if Texas is on when they're at their best, they can definitely hang with Ohio State.
You know, I'm going to take a different take on this one. And I think Texas is irrelevant to this game. I think they are. I think this is all about Ohio State and which Ohio State team shows up. We saw them, you know, against Michigan, just get conservative, just things went wrong, everything went bad. And in some ways, even watching the Ohio State-Penn State game, which was the low scoring, kind of conservative with both teams, even playing that way, even though Ohio State won that game, I think it's a different kind of team that we've seen in the playoffs from Ohio State. They just came out and it almost feels like Ryan Day is saying, screw it, we're going for it. We're going to do what it takes to win. We're going to throw the ball all over the place. I've got the best receiving core in the country, and I've got the single best receiver in the country. I'm going to make use of them. And I think he did that against Tennessee. I think he did that against Oregon. And if that's the attitude they come out with against Texas, I'm not saying it's going to start out 34-0 like it did against Oregon. But if Ohio State comes out playing that way, I don't think there's any team in the country that can beat them, that will beat them. I'm going those evil, awful Buckeyes. Unfortunately, if it's my money's at stake, Sean, I am going with them. I think they're the best team in the country when they're playing well, and that's on them. And I think Texas has nothing to do with that outcome. All right, that leads us to Notre Dame, Penn State, which I know you're way too young to remember that rivalry. They used to play every year. Great rivalry. And both these teams, you could say, are kind of playing that old school style, Sean.
They definitely are. And I mean, this was the matchup I think we were looking for Penn State when the whole playoff seeding came out. And you can argue both sides of this. Penn State had SMU and Boise State, two teams that, you know, they should have beat, and they did. And then Notre Dame just took down a Georgia team without their starting quarterback. So I still don't think Notre Dame has been fully battle tested this season. They've had two really good playoff wins, but I don't think they've played a team that's as complete as Penn State is playing right now. So I think we're in for a great matchup. I think they both have very similar styles. I think it's going to come down to who can throw the ball more effectively in this game, because that's kind of the question you get with both teams. They're run first, they're great defenses. Who can get a couple explosive plays through the air? And when you've got a guy named Tyler Warren on your team, I think that opens up your offense so much. I'm going with Penn State as the underdog here. What do you think, Jim?
I'm going to go with you on this. I do think, and by the way, the spread, it was 1.5 initially Notre Dame favorite. The latest I've seen now, it's 2.5 points Notre Dame, which means, you know, the public money is going that way. But I think you hit on something there. I believe a lot of the money on Notre Dame is still part of this narrative. James Franklin has never won a big game, can't win a big game, blah, blah, blah. And but the difference in these teams, they're both very stout on defense, both very good, both have very good running game. But I do think Penn State, if forced to throw the ball, or in my mind, I hope it's not a case they wait till they're forced to do it. I hope they come out throwing the ball, throw it to open up the running game. The way they showed against Boise State, they were willing to go over the top to Amari Evans. I think that opens up other things. That's what I would like to see from Penn State. And I think James Franklin's mantra through the playoffs has been, we are going to be aggressive. We're going to go for it. And that doesn't mean they don't want to run the ball, but it just means that they will take their shots. I hope that's the case. And if it is, I think that could be the difference against Notre Dame.
I completely agree here. I think that they can open it up enough. And, you know, again, we've said it for a while. I don't think Notre Dame has played an Ohio State caliber team like Penn State has. And I think that's going to mean a lot here. Penn State played Oregon and Ohio State, both really, really tough. And Notre Dame does not have two games that are equal to that, in my opinion. So I think Penn State's set up here to pull off an upset that some people don't see coming.
And I don't think it would be that big an upset. I really think it's an evenly set up matchup between these two teams. What I also saw, Sean, and I wanted to get your take on this in the last minute that we have, at least DraftKings put out a projected spread, whatever the permutation is for a national championship game. Ohio State is, I believe, like a touchdown favorite over either Notre Dame or Penn State. If Texas were to win, they have Texas favored over Notre Dame or Penn State. Is that the way you see it too?
I think I would agree with that, that both of those teams will be favored over both Notre Dame and Penn State. That doesn't mean I would pick them over Notre Dame or Penn State, but I do think based off of what we've seen, those are the two best teams on paper right now and should theoretically be the winner of the college football playoffs.
That's the way I see it. I think a lot of Penn State fans and are fearful of playing Ohio State again, but it's also like, boy, you wouldn't be able to look away. You know, one more shot at the Buckeyes would be incredible, and it would be a Big Ten matchup. All right, Sean, that is it for the show. We'll keep our fingers crossed for these games, and then we'll talk about them next week. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.